Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Chris Gibson is a decorated Army combat veteran and a former U.S. congressman, a self-term limiting one. He has written a book to examine the troubles in the state of politics in our country and present a plan for what needs to be done to rediscover the principles that could unite the country. Raised in a working-class family in upstate New York, the first in his family to go to college, paid for in part by a service in the National Guard, Chris Gibson rose from private to colonel in the Army, including combat command in the storied 82nd Airborne Division. Rally Point is his story, what he's learned and how he's applied those life lessons during his service in Iraq and in the Congress. He spent his last 6 years as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, representing the 19th Congressional District in New York. He also spent 29 years in the U.S. Army, where he served 4 combat tours in Iraq and was awarded 4 Bronze Star medals and the Purple Heart. Again, the new book is Rally Point, 5 Tasks to Unite the Country and Revitalize the American Dream. Congressman, it's great to have you here. Thank
hey,
you very
Joe.
Much.
Good to be with you. Thanks
Wonderful
so much.
To have you here. Well, you're asking for a lot, aren't you?
Why? And why not? And we should. You know, I mean, look, I still believe. I believe in us. We tend to take for granted now a lot of things, but we changed the course of history for humankind. With that Declaration of Independence, the idea that we could be self-governing, we put down a marker for potential. I mean, you think about it. When you were born a serf, before us, you know, you were born a serf and you died a serf, and we said that you were entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and government had a responsibility to secure those rights. You know, that pursuit of happiness, in some ways, it's unfortunate that that was actually the translation of the Greek. That was the word eudaimonia, which was really a flourishing life. And that's what was significant. Our founder said that every single person has a God-given right to rise to their potential. I think that's awesome. And so what we ought to be doing is trying to find ways to rediscover principles and apply them to the 21st century. This is really a book about the future.
So you just said a second ago that we are... that we take these things for granted. I will tell you that right now and over the last year, I feel like perhaps this is cynical, but no, I don't take those for granted at all.
Yeah.
I worry that we're losing them every single solitary day.
Well, look, I mean, I'm concerned too, because what's different from the past, we've had very difficult circumstances in our country's history, but this is the first time that I can see in my review of history where we're starting to doubt ourselves, our ability to be self-governing, our ability to overcome challenges. So I see your point and to be very, very vigilant about it. But what I would tell you this is, despite being imperfect people, our founders gave us a genius design that required us to come together to effect political change. This was the Constitution. The Constitution itself was a compromise. Of course, we had a New Jersey plan, we had a Virginia plan, and they were at a gridlock. And then Sherman from Connecticut comes forward with this compromise, and it gets adopted. So the Constitution itself was a compromise meant to drive compromise through the rule of law, accommodation happening among the people's representatives, which would also help stitch and patch together constituencies across the country. Unfortunately, Joe, we don't do political change that way anymore. Now we do political change by executive orders and actions and bureaucratic rules and regulations, and we deny ourselves this process that brings us together, the rule of law. That's what I'm really illustrating in this book, Rally Point, along with many other personal stories infused along the way to explain and to hopefully inspire.
So the ideas that you have in the book are all good ideas. I mean, I read the book from cover to cover. I can't fault you on almost anything here. My question is, this just seems to be a polar opposite as to the what we're seeing in our current situation, what we're seeing with this president, what we're seeing with this Congress, what we're seeing in the Senate. I do not see any of this, and pardon me for saying this, but I can only assume that one of the reasons you got out was that you look at this and say, I can do more on the outside than I can in this dysfunctional body on the inside.
Well, you know, I mean, really, I had family obligations that I needed to attend to with our youngest in high school. So it's possible at some point I could get back in. So I do want to say that that was a large factor here. But to your larger point, which is I feel very passionate about the country and I doing everything I can to make a positive difference, I think that's a fair point. And that's what Rally Point is all about. Is, you know, my colleagues, a fair number of my former colleagues have read it and really like it. I mean, you may have seen that I had both Republican and Democrat members of Congress endorse the book. So I do believe that this is possible, but quite frankly, for both sides, there has to be a recognition that we're on a path that's unsustainable right now, both in terms of politics and policy. And what we really need is leadership, leadership that helps explain what happened, how we became so divided, and then provides a framework for us to begin to rally. And that's what Rally Point is all about.
As we sit here right now, the President of the United States is getting ready to have a meeting with the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who have there have been incredible strains in that relationship. And according to reports that have not been really denied by either party, that Rex Tillerson has called the president a moron. And meanwhile, Bob Corker comes out and says that it is taking people within the White House just to bring this guy, you know, to try to calm him down at any given moment, meaning the president. And Republicans seem to be saying, well, yes, that's exactly the case, but aren't speaking out about it. My question to you is that sustainable over a long period of time? If you were in the House at this point and watching this go, how do you get anything done when you are as and I don't know, I don't know if it's a fair assertion or not, but if, as Bob Corker says, you're running an adult daycare center.
Well, let me say this, that several of the points that President Trump campaigned on are overwhelmingly popular. When you talk about revitalizing our infrastructure, I mean, that's something that Democrats and Republicans agree on. They need to be working on the things. Look, we're proud of the spirited debate we've had in our country, and we still are. But there are things that we absolutely agree upon. Infrastructure is one of them. We need leadership from both the executive branch and legislative leaders that find those common areas and then enact those. That's what's so key here. Not just infrastructure, but certainly infrastructure, but also tax reform that helps working class families, that helps small business owners. When we did this in a bipartisan compromise in 1986, it did help grow the economy. We need to do it again because, quite frankly, I mean, your tax code is like your grass. You may have amazing grass, but by the end of May, early June, if you don't mow it, it's going to be a jungle.
Right.
The fact is because we have a squeaky wheel system, we have carve-outs for people who are wealthy, people who have influence, and now we need to go through the code, close those loopholes, and then lower rates for ordinary Americans because that consumption-driven reform will actually grow the economy. Let me say this, too. This is very important, Joe, that, look, I mean, you mentioned Tillerson. We need to hold the president, and all leaders, by the way, but hold the president accountable for what he said. Look, in the primaries, he took on in South Carolina, and he said some very damning things about George W. Bush. And he talked about how he was going to be the peace through strength candidate. Now, look, quite candidly, on some of those points that Trump was making, I agreed. I thought that the neoconservatism strategy preemption brought forward by Bush was not good for us. I explained that in the book. But, you know, Trump has now bombed Syria. He has been very bellicose towards North Korea. North Korea is a very serious situation, to be sure. But a nuclear war is not winnable and in no one's interest. So when the president said that he would be the peace through strength candidate, we, the people, need to hold him accountable. And I believe this is what Tillerson's trying to instantiate that. And instead, he's getting tweets from the president saying, oh, come on, Tillerson, you know, diplomacy only works so far.
Right.
And you've even got the Secretary of Defense. You got Mattis saying we're never tired of diplomacy. Of course, that's the answer. So I think that when you talk about checks and balances, I think you're seeing some of that from some of the cabinet members. You're certainly hearing it from me today. You're hearing it from Senator Corker and others. Let me make one final point before we move to your next question. And that is part of what we need to do to rally is we need to recognize that whether you went to a Trump rally or a Sanders rally, there's a deep feeling right now that our system is rigged. Politically and economically. And after 6 years in Washington, I have to say, I agree. I believe the system is rigged. I very passionately argue for political reform here. We need term limits. We need independent redistricting. We need campaign finance reform of the right kind. We need lobbying bans because we need to restore faith between the constituency and their representatives, because that's fundamental to a republic.
So you make the point in the book, and I'm hoping I find the part. I made a note here, but so I just want you, and I guess what I'm looking for you to say to me is that you are that you are as concerned. I mean, I think what Bob Corker is bringing out here is that perhaps there is an unfitness for office, and I don't. And I'm going to quote one of my heroes, who is David McCullough, the great historian, who said, "This is not a right versus left issue. It's a right versus wrong issue." And what we're seeing essentially is a lot of wrong. And it's going to take people like you and others within the Republican Party, as well as the Democratic Party, to come up and say, this will unite us and bring us together.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, I focus in on behavior. My wife is a licensed clinical social worker, and she does, you know, help people with mental health challenges.
By the way, tell her we said hello. Well, we love her very much.
She is awesome. But, you know, I'm not going to comment on psychological profile and stuff like that. But what I will tell you is, as a citizen who believes deeply in this country, I believe we need to hold all our leaders, including President Trump, accountable for his words and his actions. So when, you know, he gave this speech at Gettysburg, he gave the Trump Gettysburg address, and that happened in October of 2016. He described what he was going to do in his first day and his first 100 days. And we need to hold him accountable. One of the first things he said is, on my first day, I'm going to bring forward and offer a constitutional amendment for term limits for members of Congress. Joe, I'm not sure what day this is, but this isn't day one.
No.
And he hasn't offered it.
We heard that a lot, though,
but this
right?
is what I'm doing, though, is I'm calling that out, because that's what we need to do. When you say, what do? We hold leaders accountable. And when he is not following through on what he said he was going to do, we need to remind him of that. And there are consequences for that.
You mentioned very early on in our conversation that one of the issues that we should hold him accountable for is infrastructure. We haven't heard word one about infrastructure.
We've heard a couple words, but there's not been the serious work that's
done.
Talked
about the wall, but other infrastructure as far as...
Well, he hasn't put forward the legislation.
Right.
And this needs to be collaborative, because the people's representatives, we need to have hearings, including hearings back home. And then our legislators are to hear us, the people, and then put together this work and actually enact it. So while he has said a couple things about it, words are one thing. What we need is action, and the action needs to happen through the legislative process. And right now, to your point, we have nothing. In fact, here we are, what are we now, in October. He hasn't passed one piece of significant legislation. And here's what's concerning with regard to the thesis of my book. As I argue that what has torn us apart as a people is we have walked away from this process of rule of law as a means of not only advancing change that's important to us, but keeping us together. By effecting significant political change through executive orders and actions, we're tearing our country apart. Trump has said, I've done more than any other recent president. He only makes my point, because any change, he has not passed one single piece of significant legislation, and he's making those kind of claims. He actually, today, he tweeted earlier today, he said, well, I'm going to do an executive order or action on healthcare now. Well, that's the wrong answer. We need to work together to solve these problems through the rule of law.
And that healthcare is to further erode Obamacare, but they don't have a replacement for it. Nothing has passed. So the system that you have, you're imploding while you don't have anything to
replace
it. I think
I've got a better plan here in Rally Point. Folks can be the judge of that. They can read it themselves. But, you know, I think that it puts together these principles that 75% to 80% of Americans would rally upon. What we want to see is a healthcare system that helps drive down costs, expand access, while retaining quality care. Well, here's the problem with the Republican alternatives to date. They don't do those things. And here's why. Joe, they made an a priori strategic error in my view. They decided they were going to do this with Republican votes only, in the Congress. But when you do that, you have to comply with the Byrd Rule for reconciliation. The Byrd Rule doesn't allow you to have countrywide plans.
Right.
It doesn't allow you to have competitive bidding for prescription drugs. We know that will help control and drive down costs. And it doesn't have the kind of medical liability reform that California, a purple state, quite frankly, more blue than red, enacted that actually helped control cost and expand access. So when you have those three principal things that need to get enacted to help you reach your end goals, and you don't have any of the three in your actual plan, you shouldn't be surprised when the CBO scores it the way they did.
Okay, so first of all, this is just a yes or no question, but would you have voted the bill that was passed, the health bill that was passed, I think it was the second go-around that passed the House, would you have voted for that?
I would not have voted for that plan. I stand by my votes I took in the Congress. So the vote, I took four votes to repeal the Affordable Care Act. I'd vote for that again because I believe what I have in this book, Rally Point, is a bipartisan fix. It's a new system that will actually do the things that everybody wants to do. So I don't like the plans that the Republicans have brought forward, but had there been a separate vote on repeal, I'd have voted for that. Because again, and my constituents knew this, I believe there's a better way. There is a way that, and by the way, in my plan, I have subsidies for people who need help. And I think 75 to 80% of the people support that tenet. But what we also need to do is recognize that there are different groups of Americans that need help. Part of it is the working class. Also, you have the working poor that need the help through Medicaid. And then you have the people who are professional middle class. I'm talking about doctors and teachers and firefighters and building construction trades. What they need is health savings accounts so that they can actually pay with pre-tax. But see, so you have different categories. Those that say you can do this all through health savings account, they miss the point that if you're not wealthy enough to have a health savings account, you can't get it done. So this is my point that I'm trying to make in Rally Point. I think that there's a better healthcare system that we can enact, and we can do it together in a bipartisan way.
So I read the book. I love the book. There are many things in here that I agree with you, lock, stock, and barrel in. You have a message toward the end of the book, a message to liberals. If you're a liberal and you've read this far, you must be commended. I hope to meet you in person someday. Hi. I have a simple message for you. Come home to your roots.
Yes.
Leave the status progressive
Absolutely.
Movement that threatens this exceptional way of life and the values you hold dear. Well, but isn't that drawing a line? Isn't that saying that there's an us versus them? I mean, if we're going to
Thank you for asking that question,
I mean,
Joe, because it's not, actually. Let me explain.
I mean,
I do make a distinction, and I think it's important, between liberals and progressives. The reason why I do that is I make the point that liberals have a lot in common with classical conservatives. Because why? This country was founded on what conservatives are for, are founding principles that were decidedly liberal. This was the belief in you and the belief in our passionately in the Bill of Rights, all of them. And this is why I voted against the Patriot Act, which I think was unconstitutional. I stood up for the First Amendment, all the Bill of Rights. Here's the thing. Even progressives, who I think are well-intentioned in that section, I say they're well-intentioned.
Absolutely.
They're endeavoring towards economic justice and social justice, which I completely understand and concur with. What I argue is there's a better way to get there. And the Hegelian German idealism of progressivism, which is the belief that the state will perfect mankind, may be well-intentioned, but it is flawed. And what I say is, even for progressives, and I make that distinction between progressives and liberals, even in progressives, deep down, there's a voice of liberalism that I'm asking them to recur and to find, because I think that can be the rallying point. So I'm glad you asked that question, because it allows me to clarify this point, that these are principles I think that we all can rally around.
So I heard people yelling at the radio when you said I may get back into it, and I didn't follow up. So I left 5 minutes at the end of our interview to talk about that. What do you have in mind when you say get back into it? What do you have in mind?
First of all, Mary Jo and I have not decided whether or not we're even going to do that. That's a decision point we will make in 2019. That's when our youngest, Connor, will graduate high school.
All right.
And at that point, we're going to assess the entire landscape and take a look at if I'm going to get back in, where's the best place for me to serve? Keep in mind, Joe, that we're all products of our own experience. I'm no different. When you serve as a leader in the Army, you rotate from command to staff, back to command, to staff, and higher levels of responsibility. So when I say get back in, it may be as a candidate, but it may also be as a key staff. So, you know, as to where I end up serving, that's going to depend on the state of the country, on where I think I could help, And, you know, quite frankly, if there's an opportunity for me, or do I believe in somebody who I think is trying to affect the change, and will I try to help that person, man or woman?
You know, you also said a moment ago, and something that struck me of this idea of liberal and conservative and so forth. But you know, don't you think we're all just looking for a little sanity right now? Don't you think?
Yes, I do.
I mean, come on.
You have to be
upset just looking at the climate, the story on the climate and the repeal of the climate pact. I mean, there may be some differences. There may be some things that you would like to see tweaked. But this fundamental dismissing of climate change is really worrying.
Well, to the larger point, and I make this point in the book, that when you have a conservative impulse, you are not only for founding principles, which were decidedly liberal in the 18th century, but you also have an impulse to protect. So the same impulse that is driving me to get back to a balanced budget, because I'm trying to protect man-made resources,
right,
so that future generations get the same choices and freedoms that we've had. You know, you may want to put money in roads and bridges or education, and if you have a mountain of debt, you can't get out from under it. That same impulse is the impulse that needs to protect the earth. Because we only have one Earth, and if we putrefy this Earth, we can't. There's no coming back from it.
So again, you have a tax reform. The tax reform plan that was put forward by this administration is not going to do what you say.
It will not.
Of balancing the budget, and yet. Are we supposed to, when you look at the dysfunction of, and I'm not going to say of the Republican Party, of all of the political parties,
yes, indeed,
the dysfunction that is there, why? But in this case, since the Republicans are the majority in both the House and the Senate, why aren't those leaders? Why aren't McConnell? Why isn't Ryan coming forward and saying, let's do
something else? Well, let me say this, that there, just as with the Democratic Party, there are significant differences in the Republican Party. I think that explains this draft, which I agree is not the kind of draft that's going to meet the goal, right? What we want to do is help working class families. And by the way, towards that end, the fact that President Trump reached out to families like mine, like my dad was a mechanic,
yep,
I mean, that was a good thing. But towards that end, you would think then that the tax plan would actually close loopholes and lower rates for working class families. But candidly, this is not the plan that we need to enact. But it will also be iterative. So I think through the debate and amendment process, they could get to a form of tax, of a tax code that actually could help grow the economy, help working class families, and help small business owners. That's where we, you know, look, the corporations, I don't hate them. I don't hate anybody. I don't hate Wall Street, but they don't need our help. They're doing just fine on their own. What we need in this tax reform is a populist form of tax reform that's actually going to help working class families, and it'll help areas like within your listenership on these rural areas that have been struggling since the transformation of the industrial to the information age. We need a tax reform that's going to help with this growth, and that's going to have to take work on both parties' part.
You sound like you want back in.
Well, I certainly believe in our country, one form or another, helping. And look, I think a great first start is for people to pick up Rally Point and send me feedback. I've got an email address on my Williams. After you've read it, tell me what you think. I'd love to hear from you.
All right.
CPG2@williams.edu.
I just want to tell people that they can also meet you in person.
You're going
to be at the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce for an event on November 3rd. November 5th is the Glens Falls Book Fair. Kramer's Books in D.C. on November 6th. Bard College on the 8th. That's an evening event. Williams College Bookstore on December 7th, and also Black Tree Books in Oneonta on November 17th. The book, I wish people would read it, because I think it's a very good starting point for all of the conversations that we've been having this morning. Rally Point, 5 Tasks to Unite the Country and Revitalize the American Dream. Chris Gibson, a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Awesome to be with you, Joe, and best wishes to all the listeners out there.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.